This many people are actually going to hang out here? That's amazing. Huh? Okay, I wish I had a pointer. Hey! Okay, I don't want to take too long here, guys, because I know everybody wants to be able to get home and stuff. Hey, what's that? Hey, there's a laser pointer. He's going to come with a lightsaber, though, so I don't want to disappoint him, but give me that, though, because that would actually be much better. But just act like we're really proud of him for getting me that lightsaber, too. So, where is it? Which button is it? This one. Oh, okay, there we go. Okay, let me just give you a quick overview of what the two different views are, or at least give you the conservative view. When it comes to the route taken by the Israelites going on, it really boils down to two different things. Oh, thank you, Brian. Okay, when it comes to... nuts. Okay, when it comes to the routes taken, or the route taken, you know what, they gave me a little laser pointer, but I'll put this up here in honor of your great sacrifice. It comes down to two different issues, and feel free to ask questions. You'll have to raise your hand, and it's hard for me to see out there, but it comes down to two issues. It comes down to an issue of translation and an issue of location. There's a question in terms of the location of two specific areas that are very important to understand this. The area of Succoth, where Succoth is, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, it could be Succoth, and where Midian is. Midian is, remember, where Jethro was, and that's where Moses fled to when he left Egypt. And Midian, we understand, is where Mount Sinai is. Now, traditionally, what everybody has figured is that Succoth was up here, right next to Goshen. Now, these are off just a little bit. Egypt, you know, this is all the region of Egypt here. Goshen was actually this way over here where my dot is. And they put Succoth right in that area. So the view is that when they left, it says there in chapter 13 that they assembled at Succoth, and then they crossed the Red Sea in this area right here. This is what their assumption is. This is an area called the Bitter Lakes. It's where the Nile comes into the Gulf of Suez, and it's a real marshy area. And as I said earlier, it's about 10 feet in depth, about a mile across in there. And so the assumption is that there was a low, there's a lot of natural expressions, a lot of natural ideas of how this could have occurred. They figure it was a low tide of some kind or some sort of phenomenon, maybe a tsunami or something that came that caused the water levels to drop dramatically. They even have gone through mathematic models that show how a wind blowing in this region could actually dry the area out over a given period of time and cause it to be dry land, and then when the wind would shift or change or drop out altogether, the waters would come back in. So this has been a theory for, like I said, about 100 years. It came in the rise of modernism in this country, and the rise of intellectualism, and the rise of Darwinism, where people were looking at the Bible as just an extension of evolution. This is something that we've got to just understand, we've got to take apart scientifically and figure out what these people were seeing and why they were seeing it and why they were recording it like that. Some people were just dismissing it as legend and myth altogether, but some people were looking at it trying to figure out how they could put together a naturalistic explanation for how these things took place. So that view is that the route taken then, this what we read about, all took place right up in here. And the route then that the Israelites took was down into here to get to Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai would have been down in this mountainous region at the bottom of the Suez Peninsula. And that has been a view that's been, you know, held to for a long time. It comes down to location, Succoth, and where Midian is, and also translation. Yam Suf is a phrase. Suf is a phrase that does translate to being reed, or more precisely, it translates to being some sort of aquatic vegetation. Any other time that it's used, outside of the context of the word Red Sea, we find it in Jonah. And in Jonah, it uses the same term, and it talks about not reeds, but it says seaweed, weeds gathered around my head, wrapped around my head. That's what Jonah is saying while he was in the belly of the fish. And so there are many scholars that are beginning to emerge with a different point of view as to what this is talking about. If the word suf is not talking about reed, but is actually talking about seaweed, it could be talking about any large body of water where seaweed would be prevalent or where you would find aquatic growing vegetable life like that. So go to the next slide, if you will, Rob. So this is the emergent view that has been developing recently. And it, instead of putting Succoth up here, it puts it over here. Succoth, where is it? It puts it down here on the other side of the Bitter Lakes, on the other side of where those marshes would be. And this is an area that would be a large area that a large company of people would be able to assemble very easily. As a matter of fact, on this area and in this region, there is evidence that the Egyptians would assemble their armies. Because if you were ever going to do any kind of military activity like that, and you've got to get your armies together, you have a large expanse or a large place in which you can get them all in orderly ranks. So if you've got 2 million people that you're trying to get out of, you know, the control of the Egyptians, you would take them to a large area like this where you could get them all orderly and in their ranks that they need. And so then from here, it takes them down through this route. Right above it, there's a trade route that goes along this way. But bypassing that, going down this way, there's an alternate route that a person could take that would take them down into a mountainous range right in here. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It is the Wadi Watir. And it's a natural ravine that goes through these mountains. It's a ravine pathway that cuts right through the middle of these mountains and takes you down to the Gulf of Aqaba, or takes you down here to this finger that comes off of the main Red Sea. And there's a town, Nuebi, I believe it is, that is in that area. And that town is significant. We'll look at it here in a minute. Because of some natural formations, etc., blah, 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 blah. So anyway, this little route right in through here is significant to these researchers as they're looking at it. They feel that the crossing took place over here, not in the Sea of Reeds or in the Bitter Lakes, but actually in the real legitimate Red Sea. They place Midian over here in Arabia, in Saudi Arabia, and thus place Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia. Which is really unusual, but there's some strong evidence to suggest that. Paul refers to Mount Sinai of Arabia. Old maps, and even maps as late as the 18th century, placed Midian as a region right in here, and the caves of Jethro up in that area. So there is some evidence out of antiquity that would point to this region as well. All right, are you guys bogging down yet? As I can't see, so I don't know if you're tired or weary. This region right here, let me put up the next slide because it'll show us a satellite view of the thing we're talking about here. This is that little route that cuts right through the middle of the mountains. It's a little natural ravine that cuts through these high mountains on either side and takes you down to this large expanse of a sandy beach. It's a little jut right out into the Gulf of Aqaba, and it's this town Nuweiba. That's a significant point of landscape here in terms of the geology of the area because of the mountainous region. Go to the next slide. Let me show you what it looks like. If you're standing down there, this is what this ravine looks like. You can see the sea down in there, and there's a ravine that goes through. There's mountains high up on either side. It's important to think of it in terms of mountains being around there for several different reasons. For one thing, remember how it says there in chapter 14, let me see if I can run back there quick enough. Pharaoh says to them, they're bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Go back to slide one, Robbie, real quick. If this is the area where they were, this is a very broad expanse of flat, deserty area. To say the wilderness has closed them in really doesn't fit that geography. It doesn't make sense. When you think of being out in a wide open expanse of desert, you don't usually think, yeah, I'm really closed in by this desert. But when you look at this other region, go back to that other slide, it was slide four, you get the idea of being closed in here. It also makes more sense when you think in terms of the Egyptian army, these guys were the military geniuses of their day. They knew the proper tactics. Any kind of cavalry, any kind of a mobile force always divides and conquers. Always. You never just send your whole force in one direction, get behind somebody and chase them down. They always divide and come in with pincer moves like that. It made no sense, especially back in that in original concept, why the Egyptians just wouldn't have surrounded them on either side of the sea, closed them off, and come in a pincer move. For some reason, all of Pharaoh's armies were following, it seemed like, single file back behind the Israelites as we're reading it. This makes sense then. Now you've got this natural ravine that you can't go up and around. You can't divide and encircle and flank your enemy. You've got to just go right in single file back behind them. Does that make sense to you guys? All right, we'll go on to the next slide. Okay, so as you get out of that ravine, you get out on the beach, that's facing south. So you see these mountains that are right there, formidable, on the beach to the south of you. In the other direction, back behind you, there's the ruins of an Egyptian fortress, an ancient Egyptian fortress. So you figure that there are going to be armies in that direction if you're going to go to the north to try to get away that way. Go up to the next slide. Here we got an overview of what it looks like here at this location that they're looking at right now. This is the route that they would have been coming in through, right in through this little tiny ravine that comes out into this large expanse of beach where a lot of people could be able to gather and assemble. And you figure there's an army coming back down this way. You can't go this way because there's a fortress down here of the Egyptians. So you'd be running right into their own garrison. You can't go this way because the mountains cut you off. There's no other place to go except this direction. It's a perfect scenario. I mean, if you're looking for something in the geography of an area, this fits, in my opinion, and you're learning and understanding what I'm largely convinced of, this fits so much more than those marshy areas at the top. And if Yam Suf does not mean Reed Sea necessarily, and there's a whole lot more to that, and I'll give you some websites at the end of this that you can go and investigate that yourself, but there's a big study that I went through today on breaking down the Hebrew word for that. It's fascinating stuff. This fits, in my opinion, far more, but that's not in itself. That's not the end of it. Why is this really significant? How did they even come up with this? How did they even find this? I mean, that's what my thought was. Well, how did they even get to this place? Nubia, why would made them even think of that? I mean, you can trace the roots, but why this spot? Go to the next slide. Fascinatingly, at this spot we were just looking at, there is a land bridge that goes across underneath, right underneath the surface of the water, goes across the Gulf of Aqabar. So where it's deep here and it's deep here, it's shallow right across from here to here. And it's been there for, you know, however long. It's just always been there. Probably when God created the earth, he was thinking, you know, I need an escape route right here. And so there it is. And so here you imagine Moses standing at the edge of this, a big expanse of water, and you can see Saudi Arabia across it. And he's waiting and he's waiting and he's waiting for something to happen there. And God moved supernaturally. I'm sorry, but I can't just rely on a naturalistic view of this. I can't do that. I don't have faith for that. I can only believe that God supernaturally moved by his sovereign power and did something that even works against the forces of nature. But this is a perfect access across here. But what else is fascinating about this, and this is the one that really got my attention, is the reason they even discovered this land bridge. Flip the slide. Stuff they're discovering underwater. Believe it or not, there are people who say this is a chariot. Now, we know that that kind of looks like a wheel, and that kind of looks like something there. You could almost see a chariot in that if you're really squinting and tilting your head, etc., etc. The text tells us that 3,000 years ago, roughly, that chariots were drowned in the water over here, that all this massive army, it was a huge army described here in Exodus, going after the Israelites, they all drowned in this sea. So all of a sudden, just recently, some of this began maybe about 20 years ago, but as of recently, some new discoveries are being made. This did not convince me. I looked at this, and you got to know me. I'm like the biggest skeptic when it comes to this kind of stuff. I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm sure that that is really a chariot. You know, it's like, okay. It's coral on coral. That's all it looks like to me. Flip the slide. This one was a little more convincing to me. All of a sudden, as I looked at that and flipped the next slide, I could see the idea of a wheel in there. That made a little bit of sense. And it doesn't look quite as arbitrary as a natural formation would be. But that one didn't totally convince me. That one was okay, but this one wowed me. That one, when I look at that, that looks like a spoke or a hub coming out. That definitely looks like formation around a wheel. They're finding animal bones down there, land animal bones. They're finding human remains down there, skeletal remains. That's a long time to be underwater. It's hard to imagine that those would still be alive, but you never know. I'm not a scientist as far as that's concerned. But here's the one that got me. Here's the picture that blew me away. Can you see that? That's something that they found down there. It's said that it's got gold plating on it. Coral won't grow on gold. So that's why we find gold doubloons and stuff like that. They're down there and they don't ever get encrusted with barnacles and stuff because it won't grow on that. So down in there, look at the four spokes coming off of that. And I didn't get it, but I saw another hieroglyphic picture of a chariot with the same four-spoke design on it out of an ancient Egyptian hieroglyph. Next slide. That one. Look at that. I mean, it almost looked like a manhole cover or something down there. It's the size of a wheel. Can you guys see it? I'm pointing it out there. This would be the hub in the middle, the four spokes coming off like that, and the wheel around there. This is as of June 31st, 2003, that they're finding these things. I'm telling you, man, this is an exciting find as far as I'm concerned. This is, who knows what God's doing, man? How do we know that God didn't just make sure that those are preserved, kept in place, and along the way, I'm going to reveal the truth of my word. I'm going to let people see things. Now, the skeptics will always disbelieve it. And look, I'm not basing my whole faith on this. I mean, if they find out it is a manhole cover, you know, whatever. I'm not going to worry about it. I still believe God's word no matter what. I don't need this to prove anything to me. But I think it's a fascinating find, and it definitely persuades me to believe that the route that we've traditionally felt was the correct route, going through the Bitter Sea and Bitter Lakes down through the Sinai Peninsula may be inaccurate. It makes more sense that, flip the slide, makes more sense that they would have gone this direction, straight across, right from where they were, and across the Gulf of Aqabar there on that land bridge that God exposed supernaturally by His power to demonstrate His glory. Then when they're over here, and I drew this incorrectly, but when they're over here, instead of making the route this way, they would have been coming from this direction anyway. So that puts Mount Sinai in this way. And flip the slide, and I'll show you there's some websites, if you turn some lights on in case anybody wants to write these down. Really interesting book that's out there in a video series, and we may get them for the bookstore. The Exodus case looks really, really interesting and promising in a lot of ways. But you can go and get all kinds of information at his website. Same with the Bass Institute and the Wyatt Museum. These are both organizations that deal with biblical archaeology, and they've got some really fascinating stuff on there. So, anybody got any questions about this, Brenda?
Uh-huh. How do you come up with changing a whole place? You know, I mean, I could see the mistake of maybe where they crossed or whatever, but how do you take a whole area like that and say Mount Sinai probably wasn't here, so is there like nothing there now so you really wouldn't know?
There are 13 official locations of Mount Sinai, and they're all over the place. So, you know, everybody's claiming to know exactly where Mount Sinai is. We don't know. Nobody knows for sure.
The second part is, have they brought any of that stuff up?
They brought one piece up that was confiscated, and because of the region, the way it is right now, they're not allowed to bring anything up. As a matter of fact, they're not even allowed to be exploring it like they have been. It's the same problem with Mount Ararat and stuff like that. So,
right.
Yes. Dr. Mueller. He's another archaeologist, and I know what you're talking about. There was a special about that on TV not too long ago, and he's found a lot of different sites. And it's dubious. I mean, you really gotta, really, really believe in where you think it is if you're gonna go with that. Some of the things that he points to as being like the altar where they put the golden calf, et cetera, et cetera. But it's possible. I mean, you know, there's no telling for sure. Brian? Right. You betcha. You betcha. That's exactly right. Yeah, more than likely. No. He would have gone north and up and around.
All the way down to the, that's a long
way. It is. But we're not actually told. We're not actually given any kind of specifics on how long he was wandering. You know, we know it was pretty old by the time it was all done and all said and done. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. I think it was closer to, you know, weeks, possibly even a month or so before they're to that state, and that would make more sense. Yeah, exactly. And the text doesn't indicate that it was within a day or so. So that has all been, you know, supposition based on Yom Suf. It's all based on the translation of a single word that may be incorrect to begin with. Mike, well, yeah, there is that whole wrestling match there, but there were trade routes going on through. That's correct. That's right. Is it any different now, or? No, but yeah, that's right, which again supports the theory, because it's true. There were several trade routes all through the Sinai Peninsula. Another point I want to make real quick about Yom Suf is that, as for the Red Sea, it talks about later on, it's in 2 Kings, I can't remember now, I'll have to look it up. It talks about how Solomon, I just happened to be looking at that, Solomon, it says, had a navy of ships on the Yom Suf. The Red Sea. If it was a sea of reeds, if it was a swamp, then a navy of ships, you know, I don't know. They said that Solomon was smart, so I don't know. But that seems weird to me to have a navy of ships, a fleet of ships out on a swamp. But who knows? What were you going to say? Yeah. Right. Right on. How they got to the concept of Red Sea is Edom, remember, from Jacob and Esau, Edom means red. Their regions, based on even the biblical text, their regions butted right up against the Gulf of Aqabah. So that's where more than likely it developed over time. They referred to it, Yom Suf, as the Red Sea because it was the Gulf of Aqabah was the boundary of their region. So over time, see the Septuagint translates Yom Suf not as Reed Sea but as Red Sea, and sometimes even puts it backwards, Sea of Red. So it lends itself to that theory too, that it has to do with Edom. Being read.
I just want to confirm something that I guess that everybody knows for sure. Pharaoh didn't fall into the sea, right? He survived. Did he survive? Or did he
It doesn't indicate that. It says that he and all of his soldiers went in. Yeah, it says none of them survived. Not a one of them. Now, in the movie, in the cartoon, they survive, but that's what you're thinking of. They were looking for a sequel deal, but it didn't come through because, you know. Yeah. I read something, and the more spurious it seemed to me, but apparently some researcher feels that there is an account in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic text that speaks of a pharaoh who went off chasing after a revolt and never came back, and they are correlating that between the Israelites. Then the revolt had to do with stealing the body of a king or a pharaoh, which you could correlate to Joseph and them taking the body with them. As I said, it's dubious. I didn't find anything to authenticate that from any second source, so I wouldn't base much on that. But I'm sorry. I'll go with you, April, then Rob. That's correct, because the sand would have been more compacted, and it would have been like what you have out here at the beach when the tide goes out, and it would, yeah, good point. Rob?
I agree with it that it wasn't the swamp because of the celebration afterwards, after, you know, they sang that great song, All the Women Dance with a Tambourine.
Right,
that
right.
Something really great, because it had to be something really magnificent. So this little,
right. Well, a lot of time, you know, a lot of theorists actually will say that they went over basically in 6 inches of water. I never could figure out how they got the Egyptian army to lay down into 6 inches of water to drown themselves. But that never really worked with me. but there are areas in there that actually go as deep as 10 feet, so it could support the idea, you know. Soldiers on the beaches of Normandy were drowning in 6 and 7 feet of water because they were loaded down with equipment. They couldn't get out. So 10 feet of water, it would make sense I don't even know what I was talking about. Go ahead. Yeah, you would think so, yeah, that they could just, like, get out of the car and walk home or something. But so that's why we think that it wasn't, we think that it couldn't really be shallow if we believe the text as it is. Yeah. So it would be, and that is stuff that I came across, and I don't know if I've ever talked about that, but there are inscriptions that talk about a blessing on the second born son who became a pharaoh, and those are legitimate hieroglyphs. And it was a real curious thing because the second born son shouldn't have received the blessing, the firstborn should have, and the original pharaoh should have been in place. So more than likely he had another son who would have. What do you mean when? Yeah, doesn't just because it was his firstborn could have been a grown man, and his second-born son could have been a grown man as well. It didn't mean that they had to be children. It was just the first one who was born. So, did that make sense? Okay, cool. Very cool. All right, Elaine, and we'll close up. Yeah. They do, and I didn't get all that information down. But, it's actually a very well-measured area, and they've got, you know, they've got all kinds of data on it. It's fascinating stuff. Stuff I wasn't aware of. All right, very cool, man. I'm glad you guys stuck around. Thanks. Have a good night.